Hi everyone, welcome to Yachting International Radio. You're with Corinne Rayson from The Crew Coach on Your Mental Health. Today I have a wonderful guest, Benjamin. He is a chief steward. And this is my first interview with a chief steward, so I'm actually quite excited. Welcome, Benjamin.
Thank you so much.
So Benjamin and I connected through Louisa Varenne's YPI event on a Friday. And why I reached out to Benjamin was because he was asking really, really good questions about crew and mental health. So how do you identify the signs, et cetera, and how do you manage mental health on board? So Benjamin, how long, just to give us a little bit of background, how long have you been in the industry for?
I started in yachting in particular in 2016. So I'd been doing sort of luxury hospitality for a couple of years before that. And then in 2016, I joined my first vessel and as a steward, and then I've been a second steward, crew trainer, and like you say, I'm a chief steward now.
Okay. And finding a steward role, was it quite difficult for you? Because were they more after females? Did you get turned down because you're a male?
Absolutely. Yeah. I got offered, you know, my first couple of jobs that I was offered were actually deck steward roles, because that was, even in 2016, it's not that long ago, but that was still the majority of sort of male roles that would cross to the interior. And yeah, it was females only, females only, females only. And I actually waited from looking for a job until being offered my first sort of full-time male steward job about 7 months. Which for some people might be a nice fair amount of time, but obviously at the start, in your first month when you've been offered positions that maybe I should have taken, who knows, we'll never know. I'm happy with what I decided to do. But, you know, yeah, I had to wait that 7 months to actually get just a full-on male role.
Okay, so what do you think attributes or characteristics helped you finally arrive at that role?
I was very lucky. The boat just had a big refit, and they were looking for someone that had great wine knowledge and cocktail knowledge. And I'm just going to backtrack there, because whilst I say I was lucky, I think luck's a bit of an issue to discuss on another topic. But I had those skills. I had that sort of WSET level 2. I had cocktail knowledge. I'd worked in a champagne and cocktail bar, so I was just going to be a really good fit to really get that boat off the ground in its charter area with its wine, spirits and cocktails. So I really fell into a kind of a technical fit for that position.
Okay, great. And I'm sure it took a lot of perseverance, right? Because when it takes that long to get a job that you want, you almost feel like you want to give up.
Yeah, so I was actually working 6 days a week for those 6 months in between that bridge of where I didn't get the job. Seventh month being the one where I got offered that job. And I was working sort of like those 12-hour days, 6 days a week in marketing, very low pay, commission only. And I was thinking, you know, this might be it. This yachting might not happen. and you know, people are going, well, you keep going, keep going, keep going. Maybe you'll own a yacht. We all know the reality of the cost of that. None of us ever would anyway. Yeah. But I did, you know, have to every day keep checking in, every day keep checking in. It's draining. It is, especially when the jobs you're applying for say female only.
Yeah.
You still apply.
Yes.
But it wears you down.
Of course it will. And so previously, when you were working in hospitality, was it a blend of male and female or predominantly females?
It was a blend. Very interestingly, I worked in two high-end establishments. One, conversely, was mostly female-owned and female-managed, and a split male-female team. The other, conversely, was male-owned. Don't think there was more than one female manager in a couple hundred of staff I'm talking. And then the teams were completely mixed, male and female.
Okay.
The one might question the progression.
Yes. So with a senior position that you have now, what is it like for you to manage your team? Do you have any stewards currently, or is it predominantly all female?
So I'm at home at the moment, and the team, most recent team, was me and two stewards.
Oh, really? Two stewards?
Yeah.
Did you, was it the request of the owner, or did you get to choose?
Yeah, so the owner had religious beliefs, and we were an all-male crew.
Fascinating. I've never heard of an all-male crew before. How does that work? Like, from...
Well, it certainly has its downsides. But it has its benefits.
Okay, so tell me a little bit more about that. Yeah, what are the pluses and...
The big misconception, and I'd heard of all-male crews before because I was berthed next to a boat that had an all-male crew a couple of years ago. And the big misconception was less drama, which is arguably a very sexist thing to say. Not even arguably, it is. And it's completely false. I've got to say, in my experience of having a full male interior, it's not necessarily the same. It just comes about in a different manner, in a different way. And that, I think, again, is that subculture of the male and female text and our verbalization of emotion, I'd suggest. Mm-hmm. It works really well in that generally, if you have to reprimand or correct something, or even just suggest something as a senior crew member, it's generally brushed off and forgotten. Now, whether that's a memory thing or whether it's just not a sensitive person, I'm not sure. But I've got to say, day to day, there's not a grudge that's bared between crews so much, in my experience.
Mm.
What there is, and I don't want to say lack of professionalism, but there's certainly a lesser standard, perhaps, when it comes to like crew cabins or that kind of thing. In my experience, the captain was very much of the opinion, well, you know, they are boys. I didn't like it. I don't like it. And it was very hard to kind of keep standards higher when that's coming from the top above you.
Mm.
When you know it's no excuse.
Yeah. Sorry, can you say that comment again, what the captain said?
Well, he said, you know, a long paraphrasing, well, they're boys, you know, when it comes to keeping it.
So
sort of keeping their cabins tidy, sort of clearing up after themselves after lunch.
Oh, I hear you.
Yeah. So those little things that really, really add up to a crew environment.
Totally. So did you feel like you were treated differently to the exterior team?
I don't know about that. We probably were, in a sense that we got left alone a lot more. Mm-hmm. And that might be because of the captain's knowledge of the interior, his personal knowledge. And he definitely did leave us alone to just sort of get on with it. Very little questions. Not really coming in to check on what we were doing. Mm-hmm. Not seeing where projects were at. Which is fine if you have a competent crew. And luckily we were able to do what we needed to.
Mm-hmm.
But he certainly didn't have much input.
Okay.
And you're right. When it comes to the deck crew, he was out there showing them how to do X, Y, Z every other day. Rare.
Mm. So how would you be assertive towards crew that are just, what's the right word? Like expectation, really, of you to clean up after them. That sort of stuff.
Yeah, I think I'm quite lucky that, as we mentioned before, I have always been respected to a certain level when I've joined a vessel.
Mm.
And I am quite assertive verbally, and I'm quite articulate when I need to be, sort of in the workplace.
Mm.
And that does allow me to kind of tell people, you know, this needs to change or that needs to change, or it'd be really helpful if you could do this. And I appreciate you're tired, you're up at 4 a.m. to do bunkering, etc. But what I'm a big fan of is doing everything one-to-one.
Okay.
So I would try and pull them aside one-to-one, or even just go up to the sun deck if one of the deck crew's up there working and speak with them. I'm not a fan of, you know, at tea break bringing it up. It's the last place anybody wants to hear something negative.
Yeah, totally. You've got to find the right time and the right place. And I smiled before when you were saying the idea of men and not, you know, fulfilling that role of what we call with girls who are into, or ladies who are into gossiping or things like that, the drama that you referred to. I worked in a male prison and I was flabbergasted. They gossiped like crazy. They loved it. Yeah. I was so surprised.
It's so true. I think this misconception that men just get on with it, they don't gossip, it's just not true. It's said in a different way maybe, but it's still there and it's still prevalent.
Yeah. Okay. So in terms of managing the interpersonal dynamics between crew, how would you intervene if there's a bit of tension?
It's pretty difficult. I think it's really important when you join a vessel and when you're there for a while and getting to know everyone that you can establish an individual relationship first with everyone. And that might be simply over one loves cheese, one you can play tennis with, one plays video games. Everyone's different and that's fine. And I think that's going to help a lot more because you're going to understand that person. Or, as we just said, have that time where you know it's appropriate to talk to them. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's in that one particular thing that you relate to them on.
Yeah.
When it comes to all male, my cabin mate actually was on the interior and he unfortunately had some relationship problems and it was his first boat and to me he didn't deal with it very well. Not that I'm saying he should have, you know, it was one of his first relationships and it was the first time he was working away from home. That's no easy feat for anyone. But that was, for me, that was particularly difficult to deal with because I'm learning too how to deal with everyone, and when I would speak to him, I'd try and do it actually in the workplace because I didn't want to bring it back to the cabin.
Okay, yeah.
And that's one thing I don't actually like, is sharing a cabin with people in the interior, which is a funny one, but I really don't like bringing work back to the cabin.
Yeah. So then how did you address it? Did you feel like it was resolved? Were you able to provide the support that you were hoping?
So I actually wrote something down and I let him go a couple of days with kind of leaving him to his own thing on the interior because I noticed he wasn't in a particularly good mood, quite short, a bit snappy. And I actually just wrote down, he said, I'm the kind of guy that doesn't talk, because I'd approached him quietly and said, you know, do you want to talk about it? Because clearly, you know, something's going on and I'm here if you do. The only problem was, because I'd left it a few days and once he'd said, no, thanks, I'm not the kind of guy that talks about that stuff, I was left with, well, what do I do now? Because really, internally, I want to scream, well, snap out of it then, because if you're not going to talk about it, what can I do for you?
Yeah.
And that's my own just lack of knowledge of what to do next.
So you felt a bit of hopelessness?
Totally. I didn't know what to do. I didn't fancy going to the captain because it was so personal to him. And we were cabin mates, so we also had this friendship outside of work. And, you know, I know he's got a twin brother. His mum works a lot. And it's obviously quite a male environment to grow up in. But just when he point blank said, I didn't talk about that kind of stuff, I felt shut down.
Yes. And that's what he was trying to do. He was like, do not come into my inner world because I do not want to become vulnerable. Like, I feel uncomfortable with opening up. And I think with something like that, it's important to be consistent. And another thing is to identify what you're seeing. Well, you know, so-and-so, what I'm noticing is that you're very short with me at the moment, and that's not who you are. That's not how I've experienced you. So what is going on, or how can I better support you? And sometimes we fear saying something like that in case we're going to get shut down again. But that statement may work, it may not work. It depends on the individual. And I'm sure that the heads of departments would know their team pretty well to understand the best way to have that sort of conversation. But it sounds like to me that you could have done with that probably more professional experience to come in so that you could almost like reach out to someone and have a coaching call to say, this is what I'm dealing with right now. What would your advice be? How can I handle it?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, I've just actually seen that the Crew Academy have released this half day mental health awareness certified course sort of thing, where it just helps you get a break into understanding people's emotions, people's mental health, and just suggestions of topic starters. And perhaps bigger fleets are doing this. I don't know, because I tend to work on the mid-range to smaller vessels. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if that's something that's going to be, you know, implemented in terms of head of department support, etc. It's interesting because so many boats advertise that they want a healthy, active crew and a good diet. And no one really researches their head of departments when they're interviewing them to say, do you understand people's emotions?
Yes, and I think psychoeducation is key, and that's all about, like, we take care of our, you know, the physical safety. We do our SCC W95 and all that, and I believe that mental health first aid training at sea will be mandatory. And it's so important because we're dealing with so many different elements that you would not typically find in the workplace. That's working together, living together, being away from loved ones, being at anchor for 3 months. There's so many factors that come into play that can affect your mental health. And there is definitely a way of communicating, how can I support you better? And from clients, when I've done counseling with them, the feedback that I get is, you know, they tell us, oh, just go for a walk, or, you know, go watch a movie and then you'll be fine. You'll have a better day tomorrow. Don't worry about it. And it's like, no, I just want someone to hear me and take the time to listen. That's all I want. Yeah, so it's
that really is such a common phrase, isn't it? People go, tomorrow is a better day. Or, you know, be grateful for everything you do have. That's not a very fulfilling way, is it?
No. Yeah, and I think in our industry, we're so back to back that we give little time to ourselves or others because we're giving to the guests all the time. And it's so important to take tabs on your team members and notice the small changes, because that can lead to a big change. So if they're not engaging in conversation in the crew mess, if they're not joining you on social outings, if they're isolating in their cabins more, if their eating habits are changing, there's so many cues that you can pick up on to, you know, help you better support them.
Definitely. Yeah. I think we spoke about something like this when we connected through Louise. Mm. And I actually noticed at the time my cabin mate was exercising in his cabin, Gaston, in his break times, which I just thought, like, hurrah. I had a big sort of internal cheer because I was like, oh, good. He's just doing him, you know, he's playing a game. He's doing some exercises, taking care of his own inner world.
Mm.
It was great. But like you say, it's noticing then that change. Is he still doing it? Was he still doing it when he had those problems? I think actually he was exercising a lot more when he had these problems, but it was by himself and it was outside.
Mm.
But like you say, it's a similar thing going on, but in a completely different way, possibly a bit more isolating.
Yes, yes. And another thing is teaching crew how to manage stress as well. And what I think is so important is to teach your crew members how to communicate, because we actually forget the fundamentals of communication. As I mentioned before, active listening is so pivotal, and the ability to, well, what I've noticed working with crew online in workshops, as well as in the prison system, is that if you well, online you can't really sit in a circle, but what I get the crew to do is like in the salon to sit around the TV where I am teaching, and we do check-ins and we teach people basic communication skills. And it's so interesting to hear the feedback afterwards. And they're very simple exercises, but they find them so challenging because they're not used to that style of communication. And an icebreaker that I use, which is so much fun, is to share two truths and a lie. And they're like, ah, they're petrified to even open up and share. And yeah, I think it's fantastic if heads of departments can do that more often and have those check-ins and learn basic communication skills, which is the eye contact. Or if someone in the circle is looking down, you go, I'm noticing that you're looking down. Are you okay with what so-and-so just said? So it's just noticing the small things and getting them comfortable with sharing. Oh, you have frozen.
It's interesting because I haven't even thought about this. And it's like you say, it's a topic that we should discuss more, because before and after trips, I'm a fan of saying to my crew or my department, saying before, is there anything you're nervous about? Is there anything that you want to ask me about before we go into this? Is there anything you want to clarify? And then after the trip, I sort of ask, you know, how did it go for you? What do you think we could do better next time? Is there anything you're really like, you don't want to be that particular guest again alone that night, next week or whatever? But just in that, I was just thinking, maybe what about incorporating, you know, on a one-to-one? Is there anything going on personally that you feel, you know, might be affecting you coming up to this trip, etc.? Like you say, having that discussion a little bit more, doing those icebreakers a little bit more and consistently.
Yeah, 100%. And if that forms part of the onboard culture as well. And I think it's great that you're doing before, like a pre-brief and a debrief, but it's also finding the time to do those check-ins during the season or during charters.
Definitely. And I think, like you said, whilst it's an onboard culture matter, that has to come from the top. Mm. That essentially has to be an owner recognizing that, you know, owners offer great packages now, bonuses, leave, all these things that make them really attractive and really look after us in terms of staying, I suppose, is the aim. But there's no set measurement saying to the captain, you know, make sure everyone's okay. The captains really do try and encourage, like I said, physical activity, but they're not saying to HODs or heads of departments, they're not saying check in with your crew. Mm. I think that has to come from the top.
It does, because they're showcasing the behavior you would like to see on board. And so, you know, we look up to the people at the helm, and if they're not showing the demonstrated behavior, then we're unlikely to do the same.
Yeah. And this was absolutely right.
Yeah, and this was a conversation I was having the other week as well. So if the head of department said, you know, I don't want anyone arriving to work intoxicated, and yeah, bringing girls back on board, vice versa, whatever it is, and then they go out and do it themselves, that's not walking the talk or demonstrating the values on the floor. That's so damaging. And you can't expect respect simply through stripes. It's earned. And a lot of it comes through your behavior and how you show up to your crew.
Definitely. I think I don't want to generalize, but I want to say that I've seen better behavior from chief stewardesses than I have from chief officers in my opinion and in my time. And I don't know whether there's possibly this idea of, well, if you've got a male chief steward, they'll understand a bit more. Mm. They'll be okay with that. Mm. They'll let that slide. They're one of the guys sort of thing.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a perception.
Yeah.
I'd like to hope not, because it doesn't work with me.
yeah, but it's fascinating, isn't it? So in terms of your definition of mental health, what does that mean to you?
At the moment, right now, after doing quite a bit of thinking the past few weeks, actually, I've been doing a bit of self-reflection. I've been buying a couple of books. And it's about making a choice that's going to make me happy. And that is really difficult, because when we're starting our careers, we make a choice that funds the bank account, funds the direct debits. We make a choice that our parents are okay with us doing. We make a choice that's logical in the next step of our career, or what's expected from the outside. And I've done both and all of those things. It doesn't work for my mental health. I have to make a choice that 6 months later, I'm going to go, I'm happy I did that inside. I'm still happy with it, and it was the right thing to do. I might take a pay cut. I might do this. I might do that. There might be some material loss somewhere. But it's probably my mental health is making sure my decisions are ones that I'm completely happy with. Because there's no one else at night judging your actions.
Totally.
Just you in your own head.
Yeah, totally. So important. And I think when it comes to crew, especially because we find that it's predominantly a younger generation coming through, that they may be ignorant to options in terms of self-care and maintaining mental health. And I think that, again, should be part of the induction process when onboarding crew. And instead of going, oh, let's go have a glass of rosé because that's what we do, that's yachting. Think of other activities that you can do, like hiking together or stand up paddle. Like, think of options and get them to be part of that decision-making process and brainstorm what would be great for them as a team to do, to build crew morale and really work at the maintaining your mental health at sea.
I think it's something we need to address a lot more. Otherwise, you're going to have that judging yourself a bit too much, or feeling like someone else's views are getting in your head and having that little sort of breakdown, if you like, which I've had as well. I've had my little meltdown or a big meltdown, however you want to view it when it happened. But I've had that on board with guests on, and it's not great. And there were probably things I could have done earlier to prevent that, looking back, being more aware now, but I didn't at the time. And it was a pretty awful night.
I'm sure. So would you say that was due to stress and burnout?
I think it was a bit of both. It was an F1 weekend in Monaco.
Yeah.
It was exceptionally busy. It was the last night. I want to say it's very hot. Everyone knows it's very hot, but it's what we do. And the months leading up to that, the captain had done probably several things that just irked me a bit. And he did one particular larger thing on this evening that caused me to snap and go and have my meltdown during service of all timings. So it was a bit of a problem. There was definitely stress involved and the final sort of trigger, if you like.
And looking back now, what do you put in place for yourself so that you don't reach that point?
That for me was a learning lesson that I should address things as they come up. And I didn't. I was putting things on the back burner and just, that'll be the last thing that gets done like that, or that won't happen again. And now when things come up that I don't internally feel great about, or feel, whatever it is, if you feel that someone's gone above your head, if you feel that someone could have spoken to you differently or whatever, there's no problem in addressing those things. If one of my, department came to me and said, I really didn't like that particular word you use for whatever reason, we've all had a life that we've lived, we've all got things that offend us for unknown reasons to others, or things we just don't like being done or said, then tell someone. That's part of getting to know everyone, I think. And that's something that I should have learned. Well, I'm not saying I should have learned it earlier, but I have learned now, just to address those things, you know, as they come up, if they are important to you, and really think about if they are, because otherwise it could just be another problem created before they mount up and, like what happened with me, just a snap and explode.
How did your crew respond to that? Did they see it? Were they there to see it?
Yeah, so the captain, the deckhand and first mate were there when I started letting swear words fly, some expletives, and then the captain and I had a long row, if you like, in the bridge. And then, unfortunately for me, one of our guests called a toast and wanted all of the crew present whilst I was sat sobbing on the bow, really crying my eyes out, just uncontrollably just crying, sat there. And I had a temporary male steward on board at the time as well, and he actually came to get me and said, oh look, are you okay, do you want to talk? Or which, you know, as head of department at the time, I was like, you know, you don't worry about it, you stay with the guests. And then back to sobbing straight away. And then, you know, the captain came and said, well, you need to come out now because he wants to do a toast, and if you're not going to show face, that's just rude, sort of thing. So you sort of dry yourself as much as you can, sort of, you know, maybe put a bit of concealer foundation above your eyes, get them less red, or something you can find, borrow something, or find something in your bathroom, and go and have a toast with the guests. And I did not feel like toasting. I had a sip and disappeared, you know.
Yeah.
Clear dishes or something.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
And when the deckhand said, would you like to talk, did he follow up with that later?
No, he didn't. And I'm not going to say, you know, that I wish he had.
Yeah.
It actually really wasn't mentioned after, even with the captain. We had quite a lengthy row, like I said, and nothing was really brought up about it after. It was kind of just, again, shut off.
Yeah. And this is a prime example of where you could showcase the behavior you want to see in terms of empathy and support and kindness. And that creates psychological safety at sea. Because what that showcases is that, you know, it's probably not okay to check in, or how is that person going to respond? So you're creating fear around the situation. And like from your perspective, you could have perhaps approached it, not saying whatever you did is right or wrong, but for those who are listening, a good way to handle it is to approach a deckhand and say, thank you so much for checking in and saying, you know, asking if I'm okay. That was really nice of you to do that. And that's it. And that affirms him, because he might have felt awkward to approach you. Am I doing the right thing? I don't want to upset Benjamin more. But it was really nice behavior from his part to check in. And then from like the captain's point of view, ideally, he would have the courage to bring you into the bridge and say, Benjamin, are you okay? It seemed like you were really, really stressed. How can I support you better?
Yeah, I think like you say, if I'd have just said to him, you know, thank you, it would have let him know that actually that was what I needed. It was nice. Mm-hmm. And it would maybe be nice to talk about it in the future. Who knows? But yeah. I think this is part of our industry, that one part of it that's really difficult is that we were gassed on, really busy. And as a head of department, I didn't feel like I wanted him, just, he was a temporary steward, just to clarify. I didn't want him to, I guess it is, you don't want them to see your weakness.
Yes. But how can
it
you?
It totally is that.
Yeah, but it's like, how can you use your vulnerability as a strength? Because I think that is where the respect lies.
Yeah, if I'd have showed him that, this happens, this is okay, and you know, we deal with it appropriately and accordingly, and we work together on it. So it would have been a great, great moment, but.
But this is
next time.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. What's so beautiful about it? Like, there's so much growth through all these different situations and experiences, and it makes the work more dynamic and interesting. Because we're not robots, even though we do feel like.
No. That's it. That's it. To the guests, we are. We have to be. Don't get me wrong. As you'll know, there are some guests that are lovely and just want to get to know you one to one and treat you as a beautiful human, but there are many that want that robotic service, and it's, when do you snap out of it? If you're on standby, you do you break from it, go back into it, like what, where does it lie? Difficult to swap it mentally.
Yes, another thing I was thinking is that on board we essentially are a family unit. So if your sister or brother was in tears sobbing, would you not want to make sure that they're okay?
Yeah, yeah, you're right. It's I think it's a matter of who knows, and as it happened to be at the top of the sun deck where this incident kind of started, it was the chief officer male, deckhand male, and the captain male. Possibly, like you say, is it because they, you know, are more shut off about these things? They don't want to approach it. They don't know how to bring it up.
But the more often we do it, it will become normal. So you're normalizing that behavior rather than shying away from us.
Yeah. Well, hopefully if any of them are listening, if they know who they are, they will think to check next time.
Oh, it's brilliant. But I know that this situation is applicable to so many people, and they're listening and they're like, yeah. Oh my gosh, that happened to me. It's so relatable. And that's why these conversations are so important. So thank you so much, Benjamin, for showing up and being vulnerable. It's absolutely incredible.
My absolute pleasure. And hopefully this month people are taking note of it and supporting people in their Movember campaigns as well with their mental health and growing those mustaches. Some of you are looking great. Some of you are not. But I'm glad everyone's doing it. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much, Benjamin.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.